And the question I have for you today under this theme, Let It Shine, is what's it? And is this it? Is this all there is? Even if you get all the lights to work in your life, whatever those are, your goals are accomplished. Is it enough? There are those moments in life where Clark and his wife are kind of basking in the glow of a success. And it wasn't easy. Clark fell off a ladder and he had to do all sorts of things to get those lights up. And then he made a big production out of turning them on and they didn't work. And then he kicked the plastic Santa reindeer display in his yard, you know, into oblivion. But then when the lights finally came on, it was cause for celebration. But is it enough? Is this it? Is there anything more to life than this? Because even though we have those moments where we can bask in the glow and things seem just right, it won't be long before Cousin Eddie shows up, right? In his RV with the family and their dog Snot. He's got the illness. Just when we think things might have the potential to line up for us, we get faced with another one of this fallen world's struggles. Where do you go for light? Where do you go for meaning? Where do you go for direction? Where do you turn? And the question I want to ask you today, and the one I want you to ponder for the rest of this service, and as you go home even, is this it? What's it for me? Where are those places that the world goes for the brightest lights? In our country, it's New York City and Times Square, which is right near Broadway. And if you could just get your name in lights and become famous, then there's nothing wrong with that. If you're expecting a sermon on everything in the world is bad and everything with Jesus is good and we have to throw out everything in this world, we have to stop like, we don't. You shouldn't want to ever become famous. You shouldn't want to have a good life. You shouldn't want to have any joy. You shouldn't want to have any happiness. You should just have Jesus. That's really unfair to Jesus because he created us and he said, among other things, while he was here, I came to put my joy in you and to make that joy complete. He also says in John 10:10, I want to give you a life that's full and complete and abundant. So it's not that there's necessarily anything wrong with wanting to become famous or get your name in lights or get noticed by the world. But is it enough? What if you get it? Would it satisfy your soul? Is this it? Or is it possible that there's still more to life? That even becoming the most famous person or the most popular kid at school or the most recognized person at work that finally gets the plaque that you've always deserved or the promotion you've always deserved, would it be enough? Or is there something in our souls that longs for more? I would suggest to you that there most certainly is. It's not just New York City, but you could go to the Vegas Strip and find the facade of lights, right? It's this oasis of light. And when you fly in over Vegas, it's out of nowhere in this desert. Suddenly there's all these colors and all these lights, and it just shines into the darkness of the night. I remember when our oldest son, John, and I, we decided we were going to have a father-son trip, and we flew to California. This was a long time ago, like 13, 14 years ago. We flew to California, and I was buying a new car because I'm a megachurch senior pastor. It's what I do. I buy new cars left and right. That's just my thing. I buy one every 14 years, pretty much. And this one was a Scion XB. So, you know, that's how I roll. I mean, if you don't know what it looks like, a small, teeny tiny ice cream truck. And so I went and bought this because I'm tall and it's a good car for tall people. And so we thought, this is cool. We'll fly down there on my wife's flight benefits. We'll buy this car and then we'll drive it back, father, son, in a Scion XB across the country from Los Angeles, where my brother lives, to Des Moines. And it was great. It was a great trip. It was a great bonding experience. But one of the places we drove through was the Strip at Las Vegas, right down Las Vegas Boulevard. How many of you have been there? Sinners? I've been there. Yeah. So here's, that was a setup, wasn't it? So we're driving down and John's in eighth grade, our son, and he's wide-eyed. He's like, oh my gosh. Look, wow, this is crazy. All these buildings, how do they have enough money to afford this, Dad? And he said, oh, wait, I know. It's the gambling money, right? They get the money. He goes, Dad, do you think they have all these lights so people forget they're losing all their money? Pretty brilliant for an eighth grader. He hasn't said anything that smart since. But back then, totally nailed it. Is this it? Is this the most fun thing we can do? Is there more to life than this? Or are these lights just a facade? Are they just kind of artificially masking our soul's longing for something more? Let's get a little closer to home. Here's a picture of my living room when I woke up this morning. I just snapped it. Some of you know me enough to know that's not your living room. And you're right, I lied. That's not my living room. It's like a Martha Stewart approved living room, isn't it? It's beautiful and glorious and just right. But even if you have that, and if you do, God bless you. That's great. What a blessing for you that you get to wake up to something like this, that all your lights are in perfect order and you're all ready for Christmas Day tomorrow. You're all set because you get to go home to something like this. Well, praise God for that if that's the case. But is it enough? Is there anything more to life than this? I mean, even if you get it, even if you accomplish these goals, is there something in our soul that longs for more? So we go out and we have to get the perfect present for our loved ones. And now I guess this year it's this Cosmo robot that costs $180. Wow, that must be some robot. When our kids were young, it was Tickle Me Elmo and Razor scooters. But the thing about these lights is they don't last. They burn out. If this is all there is for us at Christmas or any other day of our lives, is it going to be enough? I mean, how many of you who got so excited about getting Tickle Me Elmos when you were kids 15 years ago still have it? What about Razor scooters? Who still rides their Razor scooter 15 years later? Well, I guess my son does. Hope Ames, you must be so proud of your campus minister, right? That's just great. But normally, the gifts that you're going to give and receive tomorrow aren't gonna make it. They aren't gonna last. Eventually, they're gonna get tossed. Eventually, they're gonna become obsolete. They're gonna be put in a storage box somewhere or worse. Is this it? Is this the best part of Christmas? The best part of life? Getting stuff that isn't gonna last? That doesn't satisfy our souls? So you say, okay, well, let's go for relationships. Let's go for moments. Let's go for those times in life where we just bask in the glow and soak it in. Of being together with community and family, like at a high school football game on a Friday night. And lining up and cheering for our teams and the band, marching bands, and the cheerleaders and the dancers and everybody else who participates. Is that as good as it gets? That's really good. If you're into that sort of thing, and my family was, as our kids were growing up. In fact, the kid who was just on the Razor scooter is number 6 in there many years ago. Man, I miss those nights. I'm still the volunteer announcer for Waukee High School because I just love being there. Love being a part of the community. Love serving in this way. And just being there to soak in the moment. But is it enough? Is that as good as life gets? Or is there more? Isn't there something inside of your heart right now that knows there has to be? Whether you've been able to attain it or find it or grasp it is another question, but isn't there something inside of you at least that says, there's gotta be something more than just that? Well, for some of us then we go back to childhood, and or maybe there's a lot of farmers still in this church who you wake up to sunrises like this on a regular basis, and it brings peace, just the serenity of being out in God's creation and working the land and doing what you do on the family farm and soaking up the blessing of being out there. But even if you have that wonderful blessing, is it enough? The sunrises over an Iowa farm or the sunsets of an ocean beach with a glass of wine with a loved one, is that as good as it gets? Is that the ultimate goal in life? That's not bad. I'm not here today to say that there's anything wrong with that or even wanting that. But even if you get it, is that it? Is that the pinnacle of life? Is it so that we can have moments like that? Or is there something deeper, something stronger? Well, we're here for Christmas, so I'm sure you can imagine that I'm going to point you to something more, and that something more is Jesus Christ and his birth in Bethlehem. An event that happened over 2,000 years ago, half a world away. And it might seem so distant from us that we couldn't have any connection, but it's actually so close to us that we could touch it. A few years ago, my wife and I were in Bethlehem, and this is actually the traditional site of where it's believed that Jesus' manger was, where Mary and Joseph came in and put their newborn baby in the manger. So manger is basically an eating trough for animals in a household. Not exactly the palace that you'd expect the King of all kings to be born into, but the most humble of circumstances. When you actually go to Bethlehem and you get into this place, it's a couple of things that are really interesting. One is all the lights that are around it, and even the shape of a star that's around the circle where the manger was. And when you go there, the idea is you have to kneel down. I like that. In order to connect with Jesus Christ, you have to humble yourself first. You can't touch it until you kneel down. And so you kneel down and you reach over and you actually put your hand in this hole and you can touch the stone that is apparently, you know, a part of the original setting for the birth of Jesus Christ. Whether or not the GPS is completely accurate, and that's specifically a fact, that's not my point. Could have been 100 yards from there or half a block away or somewhere else. It was in that town though. But here's the thing, as I knelt down on this site and I put my hand onto the rock and I touched the stone, it kind of overwhelmed me. I mean, I was so close I could almost touch it, literally. Physically, I'm touching this spot. But then it hit me, as awesome as that experience was, that's still not it. Maybe that surprises you. Maybe you expect me to say, you got to have these religious experiences, and that's really it. Well, that's getting closer. You're getting warmer. But it's not the site of Jesus' birth or the stone upon which his manger sat. It's not even the manger itself. Luke 2 says, the angel says to the shepherds, you'll find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger. This will be the sign for you. Getting really close now, we're getting to the manger, but that's still not it. The manger is the thing that holds it. The manger is not it. What's it for you and for me and for our whole world? Not just today on Christmas Eve, but every day of our lives? His name is Jesus Christ. Jesus means in the original language, the one who saves. Christ means the anointed one of God. His birth is a big deal. And whether or not we acknowledge it doesn't change the fact of how big of a deal it is. And the reality that this is it. But stay on this screen for a moment. His life, in the original Greek that the Bible was written in, John 1, the word for life is zoe. His life, it means his life, it's not just physical life, but also his spiritual life, his being, his essence. His zoe, his life, brought light. And the original Greek word for light is phos. It's the same root word that is for photo or photos. It's images coming to life. But it doesn't just mean images coming to life. It means light. And more than light, literally it means the light source. The source of the light. Now we're getting really close. Let me give you an illustration that I hope will help. Today's like the first day probably this winter that a lot of us get to use our snowblowers. If some of you used yours before, then you're cooler than me. I just waited for it to melt. But when I go home, I'm kind of, will there still be snow in my driveway when I go home? Or is it gonna be gone? It'll still be there? I can't wait. So I'm gonna go home, I'm gonna get my snowblower out, and it's gonna remind me of an experience I had a few years ago. I got the snowblower out, first snow of the winter, just like this. Got it out, had it all gassed up, at least I thought. It was mostly gassed up. And I went to get it all started, and I hit the little gas primer thing, and I took the rope. And this is an act of faith, isn't it? I mean, maybe some of you have the little fancy push button thing. Yeah, I'm happy for you. I've still got the rope. And so I've got the rope that you have to pull to get the thing started. And I'm about to take this act of faith, and I yank it, and nothing. I mean nothing. So I primed it some more. It says 3 to 5 times. I went 30. Because, you know, if a little's good, more is better. Because I thought, I got nothing before. I got to get something. So I took the pole starter, and I'm going to lean into it now. I'm going to use every ounce of force in my body, and I got to get this thing started because I'm a man and we have snow in our driveway. So I took that thing and I pulled it for everything, and I got nothing. And then I did it again and again and again, and I primed it some more, and I did it again. And then I'm just going, come on! God, how long do I have to wait? Psalm 40. Finally, completely defeated, I went inside. And I said, well, the snowblower is broken. I'm going to have to shovel. And my wife said, oh, did you make sure the spark plug's connected? Maybe I didn't. So I went back out, and sure enough, the spark plug was not connected because I took it off like you're supposed to do at the end of the season. And I plugged it back in, and I hit the primer, and I pulled gently once, and it started right up. It's not just the light, it's the source of light. It's whether you're connected or not to the right thing, to the right power, to the right light, to the right direction, to the right inspiration, to the right revelation. I am the way, the truth, and the life, Jesus Christ claims. That's a pretty bold claim. Because he doesn't just say, I'm a way, I'm a truth, I'm a way of life. He says, I'm the way, I'm the better way, and I'm the deeper truth, and I'm the more abundant life. And you aren't going to get to where you want to go without me, Jesus says. The uniqueness of Jesus Christ is his universality. The fact that he is God's gift to the whole world. The fact that when we connect to him, and that's what faith does, a simple mustard seed, the tiniest of all seeds of faith, connects us to Jesus Christ and gives us this power, this source of light and life and hope and peace that we can't get anywhere else. We can try, we can go after all these other things, and then at some point we're gonna look at it and say, how come my soul isn't satisfied? How come even though I'm getting all this stuff, it still isn't enough? It's because we're missing the light that we were created to receive, to connect with. Not just the light, but the source of light. This is it. This is it. And this it has a name. His name is Jesus Christ. He's the Savior of the world. It happened. And it doesn't then depend on whether or not we're having a perfect day and all the things that are happening around Christmas. The reason a lot of people just want to endure Christmas and try to get through is because of all the things that are happening around Christmas. But the way to not just get through Christmas, but to find the light and the peace and the hope and the joy of Christmas is to focus on what happened, not on what's happening. Not on making sure that all your twinkling lights light up. Not on making as if that's the highest priority in life. Not in making sure that you find all these places in life that are going to satisfy your soul, the perfect presents, the perfect Christmas dinner, all that stuff. Good. Nothing wrong with any of that stuff. Knock ourselves out. But it's not what's happening around us that's going to satisfy our souls. It's what happened. God so loved the world that he gave his only son, so that if we just believe in him, we will not perish but have eternal life. He gave his son. He took light from heaven and he shot it through the darkest, the deepest, most distressing darkness of this world. The psalmist cries out in the most famous psalm, the 23rd psalm, "Even though I walk through the deepest, darkest valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil because you are with me, God. You are with me. Your light shines for me." This is it. And we can't find this anywhere else. Jesus Christ is the better way, the deeper truth, and the more abundant life. And the good news for you and for me today is his Spirit is here. The light of his love, his everlasting life-giving love, is here for us. Cutting through the darkness of everything that's disturbing your soul these days, the broken relationships, the dreams that haven't been realized, the new addictive behaviors that suddenly have become such a big part of your life. Do you realize life expectancy rates in the United States are dropping for the first time in generations? It's because of our addiction to opioids. At what point are we just gonna bring that darkness out into the light and say, this is killing us, this is taking life away from us? And there's no light in it. There's no hope in it. There's no future in it. There is a better way, a deeper truth, and a more abundant life than falling into patterns. But why do we fall into those patterns? Because we're looking for light in all the dark places. We're looking for life in dead places. In places, it's not the world's fault. It's just that the world doesn't have the potential to satisfy our souls like this. It all goes back to the beginning, Genesis 1:1, the very first words the Bible proclaims. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Two verses later, the first time God says anything, he says this, "Let there be light." Let's say that together. Let there be light. When we say it, nothing happens. Well, a little bit of something happened. Let there be light. We don't have the power to turn lights on. With our words, speaking them into existence, but God did. God spoke creation into existence by simply saying, "Let there be a source of light and life that brings life to the world." John picks up on this in the New Testament, and he starts his gospel the same way the book of Genesis starts. "In the beginning was the Word." Everyone say Word. Word is capitalized here in English for good reason. It's because it means more than just a written word or even a spoken word. It does mean that, but the original Greek word is logos. Logos means, among other things, literally, the meaning of life. In the beginning, God said, "Let there be light." John picks up on that and he says, "In the beginning was the meaning of life." Next few verses. "And the word," the logos, the meaning of life, "was God. And the word," the logos, the meaning of life, "is God." A few verses later, same chapter, get this part, soak it up. The Bible makes this outstanding promise. "So the word," the meaning of life, "became a human being." This is where we find the connection to our Creator. This is where we find a connection to the one who is infinite, even though we are finite. Even though we are human, we connect to the one who is divine, to the God who breaks through the darkness of our world with his everlasting light. So the Word, the Logos, became human, became flesh, and made his home among us so that we could get to know God. God didn't do it because he needs us. He did it because we need him, and because he loves us, and because he wants to kick down the door of heaven for you, to show you a better way, not just in your eternal future, but right now, to transform your life and my life right now. This is the hope of God. This is why we call ourselves a Lutheran Church of Hope. God became one of us. The meaning of life became one of us, became human, and we can get to know this meaning of life, and we can get to know the way it laughs, the way it teaches, the way it talks, the way it moves, the way it treats other people, the way it loves friends, the way it loves enemies. We can get to know it. But if all we ever do is get distracted by all the other lights, thinking that they're the ultimate thing, that if we could just grab onto that light, then we'll be full, we will never be full. It will never be enough. It's not the world's fault. The lights of this world burn out. They don't last forever. Even the LED bulb that promises to light up your closet for 32 years. In year 33, it's gonna go out. The best that we can do doesn't last. But the eternal God breaks through. His light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can't extinguish it. His light source, his connection to the spark plug of life, that's what he wants to do for you. He wants to revive your engine, to ignite your spirit, to bring you back to life, to raise the dead spiritually, to wake us up. Wake up, sleepers, the Bible cries out, rise from the dead. What's the next verse? And Jesus Christ will shine his light upon you. Let it shine. This is it. Now, if I'm you and I'm hearing this and I'm a little skeptical about all these things, or I feel like, this is the kind of stuff church people say for other church people, and it's just kind of code language and religious, and they've got their little niche and their thing, but in the real world, there's the rest of us who just don't believe all that. I want to challenge you, and I want to invite you to open your heart and mind to the possibility that the claims of Jesus Christ that over 2 billion people in the world today grab onto as the ultimate light might be worth exploring, might be worth diving into, that you would at least acknowledge that not all of the great intellectuals of our generation are non-believers, that the greatest scientist of the past generation, Francis Collins, is a fully devoted follower of Jesus Christ, that Oxford professors like C.S. Lewis before he died and J.R. Tolkien before he died, who wrote Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings, were in Lewis's case, was a former atheist who became a Christian, that some of the greatest thinkers and the greatest minds, and in Lewis's case, it was a big surprise. I mean, it was a massive surprise. He didn't see it coming. It was because Tolkien challenged him to read the Bible that he read the Bible. The guy who wrote our Alpha course, which has been taken by thousands of people at Hope over the years, and has been something that God has used to ignite faith, to shine the light, to connect the spark plug. He was an atheist. And somebody challenged him when he was a lawyer in London to consider the claims of Jesus Christ with an open mind and an open heart. It's not like I want to stand up here today and persuade you. I'm not selling insurance here and trying to get you to sign. I'm just here to point you. And I got to tell you, it's a great honor to point you to a better light today, to point you to it, to point you to the better way, the deeper truth, and the more abundant life. To point you to the one who could set you free from your addictive behaviors, who can heal your wounds from your broken heart, who can give you hope even in the face of the illness and the disease and the mourning and the death and everything that you're facing. The one who brings his light and doesn't just leave it up on some spiritual mountaintop and say, hey, if you can get here, then you can have my light. That's not Christianity. That's not Jesus Christ. That's not the Christmas story. The Christmas story is quite the opposite. Catch the direction of it. It isn't you and me becoming more moral and perfect and religious and self-righteous and spiritual and climbing up a ladder until we get closer and closer to God. And boom, finally, we've earned your light, God. That's not Christianity. Christianity is God loving us so much, realizing we can't get there, so he's coming here. Let me point you to it. Let me point you to the God who showed up in the most humble of all circumstances to make sure we would know that this light is for everybody. It's for the shepherds, the people who were outsiders, who didn't. Isn't it interesting that the first people God invited to worship Jesus Christ, his one and only begotten Son, are shepherds. They're not faithful people. They're not religious. They have a reputation for being rough and tough and corrupt. But they hear the angel and his light, the angel's radiance and glory. Glory also means light, is all around him. And God brings his light to these shepherds first, not the religious people, the outsiders. Eventually, he brings it to the religious people too. 8 days later, the baby Jesus is brought to the temple according to their religious custom. And there's two prophets, Simeon and Anna. And they've been waiting their whole lives to see this Messiah, the anointed one of God who would come. And because of their faith, God revealed to them when they saw the baby Jesus. What did God reveal to them? God revealed to them, this is it. This is the one you've been waiting for. So Simeon, inspired by God and what has been revealed to him, starts to sing this song, this beautiful poetic song. And among other things in that song, he says, I've seen your salvation, God. And he, this baby, is a light to reveal God to all the nations. So maybe you're more like the person of faith who just keeps waiting and waiting and waiting for God to show up. This is it. Maybe you're more like the shepherds and you're on the outside of faith looking in. And the only way you're going to get together with God or connect with God is if you realize that God has invited you first. This is it. Or you say, no, 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 see, for me it's more an intellectual problem. I just don't believe it. Well, then you've got the wise men, who weren't called wise men by accident. They had a reputation for being the most intellectually elite people in Jesus' day. They were scholars, students, they studied the stars. And they were following one particular light, let it shine, where they gave up everything behind. Here's wise men who had a reputation for being intellects, college professor types, right? And yet they left home and left familiar and went on a journey to chase after a star. Why? Because something in their soul is longing for a better light. They know that everything else they have, even their academic achievements, isn't it. It isn't enough. It's great. It's awesome. It's a blessing. It's using the gifts that God has given to you to their full extent. But it isn't the thing ultimately that can satisfy your soul forever and ever and transform your life in the here and now. Where's the newborn king? They came to Jerusalem and said, we saw his star as it rose and we've come to worship him. And they said that to King Herod, who was a subject of Caesar Augustus, who had all the power in the Roman Empire. In fact, Caesar Augustus was referred to as, get this, the son of God. Because his adopted father, Julius Caesar, was referred to as divine, which made his adopted son, Caesar Augustus, a son of God. And some in the Roman Empire even started referring to him as the savior of the world. The man who sat in the palace as the emperor of the greatest empire on earth, the most powerful man on earth. In the midst of that false light comes the one true light. Which one are you going to live for? Where are you going to go to find meaning and purpose and direction and inspiration and revelation? One is a facade and the other is a deeper truth. I want to point you to this deeper truth, to this light. When the Magi, the wise men, encountered Jesus Christ, they fell to their knees and they worshiped him and they were transformed. Simeon and Anna were transformed. The people of faith who were waiting. The shepherds were transformed. They went home rejoicing and praising God. What about you? You say, well, this is a story about wise men and shepherds and prophets and Jesus and babies and Mary and Joseph. It's not about me. It's about you. The Bible says, for God so loved the whole world that he gave his only son. It's his love that is it. That's what the light is. It's God's unconditional and free love that shines down from heaven to illuminate your soul. John chapter 1, verse 9 says, the one who is the true light gives light to everyone. Turn to the person next to you, wherever you are right now, even if you're watching online, and say, everyone means you, baby. Just go ahead and say that. It'll be fun. The one who is the true light, and not just light, but light source, gives light to everyone. It's here for you. Jesus Christ says, I'm the light of the world. I'm the light of the world. And right after he says that in John chapter 8, verse 12, he says, if you follow me, two screens ahead, please, Mary. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have the light that leads to life. You will have the source of light that leads to a whole new life. This is it. This is it. This is the night that could become holy for you, set apart by God. The time when your soul is renewed, when it's refreshed, when it's revived, when you come back to life again spiritually. Why not at Wells Fargo Arena in downtown Des Moines on Christmas Eve? I'm pretty sure Iowa's never seen a Christmas like this before. I haven't. This is just blow us away. We had the curtains down on the upper deck for a good reason. There's no way there, anyway, here you are. That's the important thing. And one of the things we say around Hope all the time and we mean is, it's no accident that you're here. We believe God led you here. We've been praying for you, whether we know who you are or not. That God would lead you here or to another local church here in Des Moines. We're all on the same team. So that you could have an experience of it. Of the light of God's love that is for everyone, that's for the whole world. Once you experience it, you'll never let it go again. It's not that you won't care about all the other lights. Of course you will. You should. They're still there. They're still good. Sunsets on the beach are awesome. Sunrises over the farm are great. High school football games are awesome. Losing all your money at a casino in Vegas, not so good. But there are a lot of good lights out there. They just aren't enough. Where do you go to find your light source? To plug your spark plug in? To find life? The God who loves you sent his son, Jesus Christ, into this world. It's not what's happening around Christmas that makes it perfect. It's what happened that gives us life and light. And when we realize this is it, then we realize this light is for us. Soak that in as you hear a beautiful song from a faithful man. Understand that John Merrill was invited to sing at halftime of an NFL football game today. Talk about a stage. But he chose to be here with you. But get this. Here's the thing. I want you to understand why. Because in you, over the years, he found it. He found your Jesus, Hope. He found your community. He found his church family. He found his home, and so he says, wherever I go, and I think he's going big places, don't you? Wherever I go, John says, this will always be my home, and I'm coming home for Christmas. So soak up this song, but soak up the words too. Soak up the gift of God's love. This is it.
So
You don't have to give me a standing ovation. It's okay, I'm almost done. When I talked to John earlier this year, right in the middle of The Voice, I said, John, hey, I know you're gonna be busy, and I'm 100% sure you're gonna win The Voice. Should've. But that's a whole other thing. I'm glad for the one who did. But apparently they don't count right. But anyway, and nor do people know how to spell his name. But anyway, I said, you're so busy, I don't know that you'll be able to come for Christmas Eve. And he said, no, I wouldn't miss it. I wouldn't miss it. This is it. This is it. The Bible says, arise, sleepers, awake. Rise from the dead, and Christ will shine his light upon you. We're going to close the service now by singing Silent Night, and you're going to see the manger scene come to life. We're taking a big risk here, even. We've got a live baby, even, this year. We'll see what happens. But it's all good because it's hope. And it's never about what's happening around hope that matters. It's what's happened, what God has done for us. That's the power. That's the spark. That's the source of light and life for us. That's the thing that's built this church. I can't help but remember my first Christmas Eve as a pastor at Hope. It's 24 years ago. We were at Living History Farms. In the chapel, that's where we used to worship on Sundays when we first started out. We were in the chapel that was built in honor of the Pope, and we said, if it's good enough for the Pope, it's good enough for Hope. So we met there, and it's a really nice place. It's had about 150 seats on old wooden pews. If you've ever been there, you know, for weddings or something. But it's a drafty little building. And it was Christmas Eve 14 years ago, or 24 years ago. It was cold. It was snowy. And it was not just like cold and snowy like it is today, it was icy too. And if you've ever been to Living History Farms, you know they have those wooden sidewalks leading up to the chapel in different buildings. And imagine that caked with an inch of ice. And so here come all these people who are visiting Hope for the first time. And they're like falling to their knees. Oh, here are the angels' voices, you know, as they go. Just trying to get in the church. And once they get into the chapel, nothing went right that night. I mean, some things did, but so many things went wrong. The microphones weren't working, and they turned off a couple of times. The lights went out. We had candles, but the windows had a draft, and you could feel like the air coming through, and it kept blowing the candles out in the windows. It was just one liturgical faux pas after another. And I remember standing up there during the end of the service, during the singing of Silent Night, and we were lighting our lights and singing about this heavenly peace and this source of light that gives us life. And I looked out at it's not so different than this, it really isn't. I looked out at the 150 people who were there, and I thought, man, I love these people. And I'm honored to be their pastor because they're on fire. I mean, they don't want to just consume Christianity. They want to share it. And as good as this church is, those people are that I love so much back then, that's not what's grown this church. It's the light, the source of light, Jesus Christ. As I'm standing there, behind the altar, singing Silent Night, after everything had gone wrong. We should have had like a first aid station for all the people who fell on the way in. I realized, even in the midst of all our mishaps, our imperfections in this fallen, messed up, dark world, still the light shines. And it dawned on me, this is it. This is it. Not because we got it right tonight, we didn't. And we didn't get this perfectly right either. We still haven't gotten a service perfectly right. I don't think we ever will. Doesn't matter. We'll try. We're not trying to mess up. But that's not what makes it happen. God coming down to earth, the Word becoming flesh, the meaning of life becoming human, the infinite becoming finite, the divine becoming one of us. That's it. the love of God's light breaking down from heaven onto this Christ child and from this Christ child to the whole world. And that includes you. This is it. It does not get any better than this. This is the gift of the creator of you and the whole universe knocking on the door of your heart. So as we sing Silent Night before we go home, soak that up, breathe that in, focus on that light. And as the light starts to shine around you, and hopefully it will, although this is hope, it might not work. And if it doesn't work, the plan B is whip your cell phones out and turn the flashlight on. But if plan A works like it did last service, it's gonna be pretty cool. And you might even start to feel a little charismatic, which would be crazy for Lutherans, right? But feel free to wave your hand in the air like you just don't care. Because this is it. Who else deserves your praise like this? Other than the one who brings the love of the universe and the creator of all things, the one who said, "Let there be light," to you. Wake up, sleepers, rise from the dead. Get your spark plugs plugged in. This is it. It happened. It's here in this arena for you, right here, right now. Let it shine.